Hello and welcome back to the Bruce Salen Show, a dad's point of view. I'm Bruce Salen, and I have a very special guest on, Professor David E. Weber. David is a professor of communication at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. He is the oldest friend I have, and by that I don't mean his age, I mean the longest friend I've had in life since we met in what used to be called nursery school. It's now called preschool. So I've known him since I'm somewhere around 4 or 5 years old. And while he's a lot older than me, 11 months older than me, we've known each other a very long time. Welcome to the show, David Weber.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on the air.
David is, a professor and is calling in from Wilmington, North Carolina. He teaches communication. Is it communication or communications? I know there's a big difference there.
Yeah, it's my area is communication, no S.
Okay, good. I got it right. David is one of the smartest people I've ever known. He's also the co-author with me of a series of columns we do called The Evolution of Technology, which you can find on my website. And the thing about David that's especially critical to me is that I look upon him as my memory bank, because just about anything we've done together or anything I've told him, he remembers. And I can't seem to remember what I had for breakfast. So if I said to him, hey, David, do you remember back when I was a freshman in high school, I had this crush on a girl? He'd go, oh, yeah, that was Lisa, the tennis player, blah, blah, blah. He will have never even met her, but he'll remember this stuff. So do I respect David for all of his accomplishments, and they are considerable. But I really rely on him to be my memory bank. So, David, let's start off with any thoughts you have on the basic topic today of time and how we view its passage. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I definitely believe it shrinks as you get older. The perception of time, it seems to proceed faster. There seems to be less of it available. The time between events seems to be shorter. I've read over the years a number of different things about perception of time and so forth. I wish I could cite chapter and verse, but that's very typical of the shrinkage. I can very quickly tell you the big cutoff point for me. You were in your column. You talked about how it was. I think you were writing how working with your boys kind of made you tuned into the time issue. For me, it was when I was a counselor at summer camp, and that was the first time I really had to program the day into 15-minute, 30-minute segments, and I'd never had to do that before, and suddenly I'm thinking to myself, my gosh, what happened to the morning? What happened to the afternoon? Uh-huh. So that was the big cutoff point for me when time suddenly accelerated a great deal.
Interesting. Well, let's move on to my favorite debate with you, which is David and I. Sometimes we're on the same page and sometimes we're not, and that's about the state of college and university life today. I tend to make these very big generalities that there's only one point of view represented in the liberal arts, and it's a little bit of a brainwashing sort of thing, and that given that 90, 95% of professors are left-leaning politically, that a lot of that seems to be translated into their teaching. And David tends to believe, and I'll let him speak for himself a little bit, that there's a little bit more fair-mindedness and a little bit more balance. So with that opening, David, why don't you fire off the first salvo?
Okay, well, let me start by saying something that you were surprised that I believed, which was the university system, higher education in general in this country, does have a number of problems besetting it. Some of these problems come from the outside, some of the problems come from the inside, but definitely higher education is going through a great deal of turmoil. And, I think that what happens is when observers comment on universities, when you make the observations you make, when some pundits make the observations they make about the bad news about the higher education system, what they often do is they kind of mash together, they sort of conflate a number of things. So for example, it really is, just for example, two different issues in terms of what goes on or doesn't go on in the classroom that may be offensive in terms of indoctrination and the limits of thought diversity that are or are not tolerated on a university campus. So just right there, two separate, somewhat related, but two separate issues that sometimes get mashed together.
Okay, I will agree that a lot of these issues get mashed together, but you bring up one that just infuriates me, which is this whole notion of speech codes that seem to exist on many campuses, mm-hmm. things you're allowed to say or not say, and they often seem to fit in that arena of political correctness. And here, when you and I went to school, I remember, you know, the whole idea was free thinking, open dialogue, and it seems more restricted than ever. And we seem to break down the walls with fraternities, sororities, and housing that, you know, there should not be any prejudice. And now there's, you know, dorms and living arrangements that are all one ethnic group. So if anything, I feel we've regressed, especially with the speech code thing.
Well, I think that, again, this is one of those problems that has not been fully ironed out in the university world. Again, be careful about talking about things like dorms with a single profile shared by all the residents, vice speech codes. They're certainly could be some relationship, but they're just distinctive enough that we really have to keep our eye on whatever ball we want to hit.
Okay, so go one at a time. Do the speech first, and then let's talk about the dorm thing.
Okay. Well, okay, so speech codes. My take on that is I tend to be on the somewhat conservative side with respect to that. I think that there are plenty of laws, plenty of rules, regulations, ordinances, you name it, that can protect people from any kinds of excesses in the choice of language used when spoken or when printed or when put on the internet. There's a lot of that kind of protection around in the first place. Number one. Number two, I think it's each individual's responsibility to essentially man up or toughen up a little bit, so that when you are exposed to speech that you find hateful or offensive or troubling, you go beyond that. You perhaps call attention to it, but you don't necessarily try to get some sort of external redress of any grievance you have along those lines. And finally, number three, I think that the good news about it is we are in this transitional period in our country of trying to figure out what's the best way to start using language to promote a kind of inclusivity rather than an exclusivity. And we may be in the earliest stages of trying to figure this out or trying to solve this, but there's an inextricable relationship between speech, spoken language, and conceptual thought. You can't separate them out from each other. So a lot of this stuff that we're talking about that, you know, could be dismissed as politically correct, it's actually this early stage process of trying to bring us to a certain level of thought about the kinds of issues that keep us separate from one another. And from that point of view, I think we're on track to do some good work along those lines as a society.
Then I would say that on that, with that, I think we have more of a common ground than I would think. It's sort of like every revolution. You know, maybe we've gone too far right now, but when it swings back to somewhere in the middle, it will be a proper balance of I wouldn't call it speech codes necessarily, but just knowing when it's right and wrong to say certain things. Mm-hmm. I think of the feminist movement the same way, that when the women's movement first began, it was very radicalized. And now I think the progress that's been made is a lot more in the middle, so that women are now allowed and have opportunities, whereas there was a period when we were young adults that if you wanted to get married and have kids, you were just frowned upon. Now women are pretty much allowed every sort of choice, and they're both given credibility. I'm not sure the same is true for men. That's a different discussion. Uh-huh. But if that happens on the universities, as far as the propagandizing that I've been ranting about here and there, I will be very pleased. So we're almost out of time, David. Final thoughts you'd care to share?
The one thing I'd like to do is I'd like to invite listeners to inspect universities on their own. Many people have negative reactions to universities without really any direct experience of it. Now, yeah, you can have opinions about various things you don't have direct experience of. You don't have to go to war to have an opinion on should we or should we not be involved in a war, for example. But mm-hmm. something like a university, you can, you know, any of us can go to a university, get permission to sit in on classes for a couple of days or a week or an hour or a morning, so that you can see that what goes on in university classrooms is not as offensive or reprehensible as many pundits would have us believe.
Okay. Well, that's good advice, and I think that's very fair-minded. Care to share any contact information? And if you don't, that's fine too, Professor.
If you want to get in touch with me to agree or disagree or give me your take on this, my name is David Weber, W-E-B-E-R, and my email is weberd@uncw.edu. And if you have a college kid who'd like to study in Wales in spring 2014, I'm taking a group over there for 6 months. It's a wonderful program.
All right. Thank you, Professor. It's been a pleasure. I need to catch up with you personally later, but that will have to wait. Stay tuned for some closing remarks by yours truly after these messages. What did they do just when everything looked so dark? You've got to accentuate the positive. Eliminate the negative. Latch on. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.